suckling pig is China's equivalent to our turkey on Thanksgiving. The young pigs are butchered between the age of 2 and 6 weeks old and then slow roasted for maximum flavor. And because the meat is so delicate, it requires an experienced hand to carve them.
Look at the knife skills on this guy. Reminds me of the rabbi that performed my bris back in 1961 at the children's wing at Mount Sinai Hospital on the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Hey, what's up, kids? Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil, and I don't know what time it is where you're at, but right now over here, it's beer 30. I am supercharged, ready to drink some beer. Got a lot of things to talk about. I'm still picking up the pieces from our long break, actually, so still things I wanted to bring up. I wanted to give a quick shout-out to Patrick and Rachel Rue at the brewery here in Placentia. We featured them on the last show with their Orchard White Belgian Wit and the Steamer Clams. And he was extremely gracious. He featured us on his blog. He put a blurb on his website. Very appreciative. So Katrina and I decided to visit their tasting room last weekend. Check out the brewery. We saw their new tasting room. And that is enough to fill a major portion of the show. And I really want to talk about it and give it a lot of time. So I'm going to save it for the next episode. Maybe give you guys a reason to come back. A little teaser. But suffice to say that Patrick and Rachel are doing so many things right. They're brewing awesome beer. There's a very classy tasting room right in the brewery. They provide cheese to pair with one of their beers from a local cheese shop we have here in Orange. They're really into pairing beer and food together. And they have a white Labrador. It's one of the friendliest dogs you'll ever meet. And they named him Barley. Dude, how much more dedicated to beer can you get to name your dog Barley? I just think that's awesome. Anyway, I've got a lot to talk about there. So I've got pictures. I figured I'd use it as a little bit of a teaser, get you guys to come back. But if you want to check them out, thebrewery.com or brewery.blogspot.com. Exclusively Southern California distribution at the moment, but I know at least one bottle is going to make its way on the East Coast this Christmas when one Lucky Beer Safari podcast picks my name for the annual beer exchange video. So we'll see if that happens. And also, if you are going to be attending the GABF this year in Colorado, the brewery is going to be there. So we get a chance to taste all that beer. So make plans. If you haven't made plans to go to the GABF, that might be a good reason why. Anyway, I wanted to mention one other thing before we got going. Anybody who is listening to the show in Texas, I hope everything's okay there. Ike looked like a real bastard, and I think the death toll was 8. And considering that's not a horrible death toll, it's still not great, all right, because that's 8 people who died. But it's a shame. But they were definitely more alert this time around, so I hope you're all okay. And to anyone who was close to the victims of the Metrolink crash, the train wreck here in Chatsworth over this past weekend, my heart also goes out to you guys as well. Just kind of tragic. But to the best of my knowledge, and as far as I can remember, I don't think I featured any homebrew on the show. I mean, I've tasted some of mine, but I've never really featured it as a show beer. So I guess another first for the show, Sick Puppy from ShouldIDrinkThat.com made some homebrew, and he sent me a bottle. And this is his East Coast Hoppers Belgian Abbey Ale. And I got to tell you, I opened it before the show started. Really good beer. Very tasty, slightly peppery, very strong Belgian profile, and a super smooth finish. So it didn't. It had some residual sugars left over. I'll tell you something else. The alcohol wasn't all up in your face, you know, like it normally would be with a lot of Abbey beers. So either he's hiding it real well, or I'm just going to feel it later, but it's a great beer. I'm really enjoying it. I'm about halfway through the glass here now. And that's a little head on it. We're actually going to feature 2 beers on today's show. So I'm going to be opening another one a little later, which is kind of special beer. But it's not as special as this one, because this one's from a friend of ours. It's definitely a Belgian beer day here on the show. And this is a good way to start. Well done, Sick Puppy. Well done indeed. Super clean beer. Nice, solid carbonation. Not too sharp. Not flat, you know. Head sticks around for a little bit. It's a very consistent beer. And I think it's the first time he'd ever brewed a Belgian, so I like when homebrewers decide to start brewing Belgian beers, because they're the best. So getting on to the chicken portion, whenever I tell Katrina that she can have whatever she wants for dinner, there's about an 80% chance she's going to ask me to make chicken parmesan. It's like her favorite. It's a wholesome dish. It's like southern fried chicken with marinara on it and cheese. It's wholesome. All right? It's easy as hell to prepare. It's stick-to-your-ribs kind of meal. Reminds me of those special Sunday family meals we used to enjoy when I was a kid. So if you'd like to make it, I'm going to share my recipe with you. And again, this isn't a secret recipe. It's very standard, but it's how I make it. And the key to making it especially tasty is being able to fry chicken. If you can fry chicken and you can make basic marinara sauce, and it, the rest of it's money. And let me get down to something else here. This is not a cooking show. People think it's a cooking show. It's not. I'm not a chef. I don't claim to be one. I do like to make food. I'm a fairly decent cook in the kitchen. And this isn't a cooking show. So, you know, we don't cook all the time. And I'm not ever going to give you a recipe that you can't get somewhere else. But I'm going to give you the recipe that I like to use when I'm making stuff. So if I'm going to share the recipes that I use, they're generally, I don't write them. You know, usually they're bastardized versions of other recipes that I've gotten or handed down to me. So again, this isn't a cooking show. So people who think this is a cooking show, it's not. I like to talk about food and beer and other stuff. But once in a while, we might make something on the show. And again, I wanted to talk about tomatoes, too, because it's tomato season, obviously, or we're getting toward the end of tomato season for most people. If you grow your own tomatoes, or maybe you know somebody who does, they lay a ton on you at once. You didn't notice that, right? Because it does. It happens that way. I mean, you'll spend all spring watering the plants. Nothing happens. You might get a few flowers and stuff. Then all of a sudden, boom, they just start coming in like crazy. And you've gone from having like no tomatoes to too many tomatoes. You don't know what to do with them. So if you want to enjoy them all year, instead of letting them rot or, you know, giving them away to your neighbors and friends, stew them. It's really easy to stew them and freeze them. It's really super easy, I swear to you. Here's what you do. You take each tomato, clean it, turn it upside down, and then score the skin with a big X. All right, just under the skin. You don't want to hatch it. Just make a nice little X and make sure you break the skin. Get some water boiling in a large pot. Put a little salt in there. Get it to a boil. Throw the tomatoes in the water. Get it back up to a boil. Turn the heat off. Put the top on the pot and let the tomatoes sit in the water for about 10 minutes. Then take the tomatoes out with a ladle and put them immediately in an ice bath to stop the cooking process. It's as easy as that, all right? When they're safe to hold without scalding your hands, take the tomatoes out. Peel the skin off with your fingers. It comes off really super easy. You got these tomatoes in your hand now, right, with no skin on them. Put them in either Ziploc bags or the Gladware containers, the disposable ones. Throw them in the freezer. The next time you need tomatoes for sauce or for a recipe, you've got freshly stewed tomatoes from your garden or your friend's garden. You're not buying them in the can. There's nothing wrong with canned tomatoes, but fresh tomatoes, there's nothing that tastes better than that. So if you have extras, you don't know what to do with them, cook them. Freeze them. It's a friendly tip from your friend at My Life as a Foodie. All right? So let's get back to the recipe here. Here's what you need for basic marinara sauce. Now, I don't know if you guys may not know how to make marinara, or you've never made it before, or you buy it in canned, whatever. If you want to make your own, it's real easy too. Take 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, put it in a pan, get it on medium heat. Take a half of a white onion, dice it into a fine dice, throw it in the oil. Cook the onion till it's translucent, starting to break down a little bit, but not taking on any color. Okay, so it's nice and soft and soggy and starting to go clear. That's when they're done. Add 28-ounce can of whole tomatoes that you crush by hand. Take the whole tomatoes out, crush them with your hands. Or better yet, use your friend's tomatoes that you've stewed yourself, or they take them from the freezer. But I like them chunky, you know, so you get the whole tomato and you just squeeze it with your hand and break it up with your hand. If you want to buy crushed tomatoes, you can certainly do that, or chopped tomatoes, that's fine. But it kind of tastes better when you got your hands all over it. Season that with salt and pepper, a little bit, not too much. You don't want to oversalt anything ever. You oversalt it, you can't really go back. If you undersalt it, you can always add more. So get that up to a boil. Give it a nice taste. It tastes good, fine. Put a little pinch of sugar, a little splash of wine, add a tablespoon of fresh basil, cut it into pieces by hand or a chiffonade if you want to get fancy. Half a teaspoon of fresh chopped oregano. If you can't find fresh oregano, that's fine. You can use a quarter teaspoon of the dried. All right. Now, get that on very low heat. Put a top on it. Put it on the back burner and just let it sit for about a half an hour. While that's cooking, we get to work on the chicken cutlets. This is another just so damned easy. It's unbelievable. You're going to be amazed at how easy and how delicious this is. You want boneless chicken breasts. I've got a big thing for thighs, so sometimes I like to use those. But traditionally, chicken breasts. So that's what we're going to stick with. On this recipe, we're going to use chicken breast. Here's your ingredient list, what you need for chicken parmesan. You want 4 skinless, boneless chicken breasts. 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 2 large eggs, tablespoon of water, 8 ounces of mozzarella. Whatever you want. Mozzarella. If people say mozzarella, shredded, all right? Freshly grated Parmesan cheese and shredded fresh basil. Go to your oven, turn it on, 400 degrees, get it preheating. Then you got a pan over medium heat. Put about 3 tablespoons of olive oil in the pan and get it nice and hot. Put your chicken breasts on a cutting board. Lay a piece of fresh plastic wrap over them. Pound the chicken breast with a flat meat mallet. You want to pound the crap out of this thing. You want it flattened about a half inch thick. Put a half cup of the flour in a shallow platter on the left. In the middle, you want to put 2 eggs with a little water. Beat it until it's frothy. That's in a bowl in the middle, so you're basically making scrambled eggs, all right? So you have a half cup of flour. Then you've got a bowl of the eggs with a little bit of a tablespoon of water there. On the right, you want another platter with another half cup of flour. Each one of those half cup of flours in the platter, you want to season it liberally with salt and pepper. Get it nice and seasoned, okay? Mix it in with a fork, distribute it real nice. Now, this is what you have basically now is a fry station, all right? You've got flour, you've got egg, you've got flour. How fry stations work is you take the meat, you dip it in the flour, then you put it in the egg, and you wipe the egg off real nice. You shake it so there's a little, all the excess comes off, and then you put back in the flour. The reason why you do this is, if you just put the chicken in the egg mixture, then put it in the flour, it's going to come off the skin, or it's going to come off the breast, because it's got nothing to hold on to. When you put flour on the chicken before you put in the egg, then reflour it, it's got 3 layers, and it holds perfectly. That's kind of the key to making really good fried chicken, well, from what I've seen, what I've learned. Anyway, so you've got this, right? Take each one of the chicken breasts, season them with salt on both sides. You look at this thing now, it's all flattened, right? It should look like a big football, kind of like a football. Cover one half of the football with a tablespoon or more of fresh grated Parmesan. You want to add a little more? Feel free, okay? But a tablespoon or more, all right? Distribute it real nice and even. Fold it over so the edges touch. Now you're looking like, it looks like a Parmesan sandwich in between 2 layers of chicken. Dredge both sides of the chicken cutlet in the seasoned flour. Dip it in the egg mixture. Coat it completely. Let the excess drip off. Dredge it in the second batch of flour. Then you got your oil nice and hot in the pan. Add the cutlets, fry them for 4 minutes on each side till it's gold and crusty. Now, here's the deal. You want to turn them only once, just like when you're grilling, right? You cook it, let it cook for 4 minutes, turn it. Let it cook for 4 minutes, take it off. Don't keep turning stuff. All right, just only turn it once. Place the fried chicken cutlets on a cookie sheet or a casserole dish. Pour some of that marinara sauce over the chicken. Sprinkle a little mozzarella on top, a little basil. Bake the chicken Parmesan for 15 minutes at 400 degrees until the cheese is nice and bubbly. Serve it hot with pasta or on its own. You don't have it to have it with pasta. If you don't want pasta, that's fine. I like it with pasta. You can have it as an entree, as a second course after the pasta. Or you can make sandwiches with the damn thing. I don't care. Go nuts. You know, it's a great meal. It's very wholesome. And it's one of my favorite things to cook. And, you know, one of my wife's favorites, too. So have a good time with that.
A Chinaman goes to see the eye doctor. After the exam, the doctor says, I know why you're having trouble. The Chinaman says, why? The doctor says, you have a cataract. The Chinaman says, no, I have a Rinkin Continental. You don't get it?
I get it. He drives a Lincoln.
You know, people say that the thing they missed the most about Dude Night were the games. Now, they love the games. We're going to do a little game tonight. A couple games, actually, if I think about it. But the first game is, we're going to have to guess what it is I'm doing. Listen. You know what that is? What am I doing? Do you know yet? Yes, I've just opened a Belgian beer. But do you know which one? You probably do already. You probably read the show notes. Oh, we'll get back to that, but I just wanted to open that. I was in a hurry. Oh, man. I love me some beer. I'm almost done with Sick Puppy's beer, too. Again, nice job, Sick. I'm loving this beer, man. It's awesome.
Hey, this is Jeffrey T. for BeerSafari.com. If you want to listen to all the notable beer casts all in one feed, go to beersafari.com. You can hear Big Foamy Head, Craft Beer Radio, Davis on Draft, The Beer Report, ShouldIDrinkThat.com, Life as a Foodie, and check it out, BeerSafari.com. Good Beer Show is a member, and a proud fucking member.
Carol Blymer, I think is how she says it. She's a home chef, and she started her own blog called French Laundry at Home. I don't know if I talked about this before. I don't think I have. What she does is she takes a selected recipe from the French Laundry cookbook. That's the infamous Thomas Keller food porn book. It has all of Thomas Keller's famous recipes in it from his restaurant, French Laundry. And what she does is she prepares a dish each time, and she photographs every step, documents everything she does, problem solves, like things that you might, you know, run into that are a problem for like regular home cooks. She problem solves there too if things get too difficult. And it's really impressive. And she's a really incredible cook. I mean, really, really good. Well, she recently announced a new project that she's going to do, and it's going to make the French Laundry feel like Sandra Lee's semi-whore maid. Seriously. She received an advanced copy of Alinea, the cookbook. We talked about that last time. Alinea, remember that? She launched a new site, AlineaAtHome.com. You know what's coming, right? She's going to begin preparing meals from the Alinea book in her own home, and documents all the steps along the way, just as she did with the French Laundry cookbook, but harder, because Alinea is ridiculous. And I got to thinking about this. Sometimes I feel I made the easiest choice doing a podcast. There's no way I could put that kind of time and effort into a project that big, and the amount of skill involved, it would knock me out. I'd be on the mat, seriously. Anyway, check out her book, FrenchLaundryAtHome.com. Or did I say check out her book? I did, didn't I? Her website, FrenchLaundryAtHome.com, and a new site, AlineaAtHome.com. It's A-L-I-N-E-A, AlineaAtHome.com. I've yet to see that Alinea book, but I'm going to get my hands on it. Maybe Christmas. That'd be a nice Christmas gift. It's too good not to own. You have to have it. The book has a trailer. I want to say that I own a book that has a trailer. Okay, so let me get to this. Whoops. See, I'm professional. The second beer we're going to feature on today's show. Wait a minute. What am I doing? Podcast of the year. This next beer is from Belgium, and it's quite a bit different. I'm really excited that I even found the damn thing, let alone having a chance to actually have it on the show. It's from Brasserie Caracol in Flamignol, Belgium, and the beer is called Nostradamus. It's a dark Belgian strong ale. Now, I want to slow down a bit because I really want to tell you how impressive this is to me. Let me pour some. Oh, did that sound good or what? Whoa. Looks good, smells good. Nice. Comes in that big 750-milliliter cork bottle like all big Belgian beers should, you know? Oh, man, smells good. Reminds me of every classic strong Belgian ale. Smells the same to me. It smells like someone left some fruit out, got it really super ripe, and then dipped it in booze. Like fruitcake, except it doesn't suck. Because, come on, fruitcakes suck, dude. Fruitcakes are what you give at Christmas to people who you don't like. Admit it. Admit it, fruitcakes are horrible. I don't know who invented it, but they need to be shot. But this isn't fruitcake. This is like sex cake. So we taste it now, and it tastes a lot like it smells. Rich, deep fruit. You definitely, I don't know, the alcohol's a little hidden, so it's not banging you. And it's a little lighter than you'd expect. Not harsh at all. Very smooth. And I'll tell you what I love about this beer more than anything, and it goes for every beer just like it, because it does, it kind of represents the style very well for me. Close your eyes. Take a sip of a beer like this and think only of the tasting room for this brewery. And then imagine what that's like. All right? It's a little chilly. Maybe it's about 62 degrees outside. Maybe it's 62 degrees inside too. Stone walls. It's a little dark in there. A few recessed lights hanging from the ceiling. It's raining outside maybe. I can imagine being in the tasting room for this brewery, drinking this beer just outside the conditioning vessel where they took it out, where it was living for a few weeks or a few months, Every sip I have of this beer, I go right back there, and I'm imagining that I'm sitting right there. These strong Belgian ales do that for me every damn time. It's freaking magical to me, and it's part of the reason why I'm so infatuated with the style and Belgium in general. I just find it fascinating. But my story about this beer and the reason I'm featuring it doesn't end, you know, at the fact that I just like it a lot. What makes it special is that this beer from this brewery was featured on The Thirsty Traveler, which was a show on Fine Living Network hosted by Kevin Brausch. He's the field representative for Iron Chef America now. But he did a show on Belgian beers long ago. They show the replays now on Fine Living. And of all the episodes that he did, that one was my favorite. Because he goes to this brewery, he works the bottling line, he drinks with these guys, he cooks with the beer. And the place is a small hole in the wall in the middle of the city of Flamingol. In fact, I think it could be the smallest brewery in all of Belgium. I wouldn't be surprised. So it almost seemed like a miracle that I found out that they distributed the beer here in the States. And it was even further. I mean, it's how long ago was it that he actually featured them? It might have been 2001. It was a long time ago when the brewery opened. So I have to think that being on Thirsty Traveler maybe helped him. And distribution, you know, the word of mouth got around and supply, you know, the demand started to hit supply. And they said, well, maybe we can bring it to the U.S. So that's what happened. Jean-Pierre was the head brewmaster, really knows that he's onto something good. You know, you can tell. You're watching this episode. He had a full-time job, and he was working at the brewery. And his wife and his kid were living in the back. I mean, he really wanted it to work. I mean, he gave up a lot to make it happen. And they did everything by hand. They worked the bottling lines. They didn't use forklifts for the crates of beer. They stacked them in the cellar by hand. They were fanatics for the traditional method of making beer, of crafting beer. They went to the boiler room, and there was a wood fire underneath the boiler heating the tanks. And the vat that they used to mash the grain, where they mashed the grain, 150 years old, and when it came time to churn the mash, they did it by hand. I mean, that's devotion. Not only to beer, but to the traditional way of making it. So now you know why I think Patrick, Rachel, and Tyler at the brewery are brewers to watch out for. Because they're starting small, they're going to make a big splash. Traditional ingredients, some non-traditional ways of making beer. They present big flavor. They become favorites of beer geek boys like me. And before you know it, they're big, they're worldwide, and the world's caught on. And a fact I learned later about all of this, if you're a beer geek, Caracol uses DeWolf Kosinks malt, which is a really unique crystal malt or caramel malt. It imparts a really rich, deep flavor to beer. It's kind of like a raisiny flavor. A lot of Belgian beers use this, so it's available now in the U.S. for any home brewers who want to play around with it. Take a look for that. But kind of a fun thing for me, just kind of nostalgic to actually have this beer on the show, and I really, really like it a lot. Okay, let's play a game for real this time. How good are you at pronouncing the names of all the Belgian beers that you enjoy? You know, how can you do it? Can you do it like it's, can you say it like it's supposed to be said? Today, we're going to find out. Father Spoon sent me a link to this website. I'll include the link on our website, zeroface.wordpress.com. And what it has, it's a website that has audio of the proper Flemish and French ways of pronouncing names of Belgian beers and most things Belgian. So I'm going to name a beer. I'm going to guess at how to properly say it in French or Flemish. And then I'm going to play how it's actually said in French. And you can play along and see how you do. And I'm here live, all right? So if I screw up, it's going to make me sound like a jackass. But you have a greater luxury of just telling me you got them all right and that I sucked, which is true. So let's get going on this. I've got, how many did I get? I got 24 of these things, so we're going to go through them alphabetically. So we'll start with Afligem.
Afligem?
Okay, you see? Afligem. Okay. Bruges. Now, I used to say Bruges, but it's Bruges. I'm going to say Bruges.
Blanche de Bruges.
Blanche de Bruges. The French have a new word for everything. Okay, Cantillon. Well, I used to say Cantillon. Now I say Cantillon. All right, so it's Cantillon.
Cantillon.
Cantillon?
Cantillon.
Excuse me? Let's see. Carolus. Carolus.
Roden Carolus.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What?
Roden Carolus.
No, give me a break. Okay, Chimay.
Chimay.
Why is Chimay? Why they put it like... I don't get it.
Chimay?
They have accent in weird places. Okay, Korsendonk.
Korsendonk?
All right. Dikonik. Oh, I'm going to screw that one up. I'm so white. It's unbelievable. De Koenig? Okay. Okay, I know I'm going to screw this one up. Delirium tremens.
Delirium tremens?
Tremens?
Delirium tremens?
Roll that sucker, dude. Saison Dupont.
Saison Dupont.
Oh, I think I nailed that one. Ooh, hello over there.
Saison Dupont.
Duvel.
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 Framboise.
Framboise.
Framboise. Bad breath.
Framboise.
Okay, goose. We used to say geese. Goose.
Goose.
Geese.
Goose.
Do it again.
Goose.
Hoegaarden.
Hoegaarden.
Hoegaarden. Oh, that's right. Hoegaarden. Le chouf.
La chouf.
La chouf. Okay, lambic. I was going to say lambic, but it's lambic.
Lambic.
Lambic. Where am I on this? Oh, Mordgat. Mordgat. Like Dracula. Mordgat.
Mordgat?
Orval.
Orval.
Orval. Old Bruin. This is Old Brown Ale. Old Bruin.
Old Bruin.
Oof. I suck. Rodenbach.
Rodenbach.
Rodenbach. Okay, Still Nacht.
Stille Nacht.
Stille Nacht. Boy, Michael Jackson would be whooping my ass. Trappist.
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 Westmalle.
Westmalle.
Westmalle. All right, just a couple more. This one's spelled all effed up. West Vleteren.
West Vleteren.
Oof. Okay. Wit.
Witbier.
Witbier. Witbier?
Witbier.
Wit beef?
Witbier.
Oh, whatever. Okay. I stink. You know, I just suck. I'm no good at this. And I'll admit it. I can't speak foreign languages. Welcome to America. Thank God I was born American. I couldn't learn a foreign language if I tried.
Me no reiki.
Anyway, thanks, Spoon, for that website. That was really cool. I put a link on the website, zeroface.wordpress.com. Check it out. Link's kind of weird, so just click the link and check it out for yourself and try some others. See how you do. I have fan mail. I haven't read some of this in a while. Kind of get behind. I get emails sometimes from listeners of the show, and people just want to chime in with stuff. So figured I'd read a few of these. Kind of interesting. Which one is this? Neil Green from Akron, Ohio. He writes, "Why is it that bars refuse to serve me when I'm drunk, yet any fat bastard obese person can go into a McDonald's and buy all the crap they want? It doesn't seem fair to me. Why the double standard?" Neil, that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe you should bring it up with McDonald's, I guess. I don't know. This one is from, who's this from? San Francisco. Melvin Denton. He says, "Hey, Phil, I followed your lead last week, and I went to an Asian market for the first time. The end aisles had all these small Asian women selling different things. One woman was peddling this all-natural male enhancement drink that was designed to make men last longer in bed. Well, let me tell you something. She wasn't lying. It really works. This morning, I didn't wake up until 11:30. Yeah, nice, Melvin. I'm glad it worked for you. And good for you, branching out to an Asian market. Not exactly what I had in mind when I told you to go to an Asian market, but it's good that you ventured out. We're all over the place. Look at this. Birmingham, Alabama. Trevor Fredrickson. He says, "Whoever says that microwave ovens make frozen pot pies go soft is full of shit. Yesterday, I placed a Marie Callender's chicken pot pie in my microwave. I cooked it on full power for 1 hour and 40 minutes. Soft? Not hardly. I needed a sandblaster to get the damn thing off my dish. Is it any wonder food poisoning is on the rise when so many ignorant people are undercooking their food?" Well, that's an interesting experiment, Trevor. And hope you enjoyed your pot pie. Got some weird people listening. Back to the caracal. I thought it was an artisanal, but it's not. It's just a Belgian brown ale. Very good beer, though. So happy to be drinking this. You know what I haven't talked about in a while is Food Network. So I thought I'd bring something up to kind of whet your appetite a little bit. Remember Michael Simon? He was the chef that won Next Iron Chef America competition. He became a a new Iron Chef, which was a spot that supposedly was created to replace Mario Batali, who I guess is still competing on the show, as he's competed just as many times as Michael Simon has, so he's still there. Anyway, they've only used Simon like 3 times on the show since he won, which I kind of found to be a complete waste of the guy's talent, because he is a talented chef. Lola in Cleveland is the restaurant that he owns. Very good restaurant. And Food and Wine named him one of the top 10 chefs in America. So he's definitely a good one. So I like Simon. And it's no surprise that the Food Network pretty much squandered his talent after making such a big splash with the Next Iron Chef, because that's what they do. But they're kind of coming around a little bit, because if you remember earlier this year, Robert Irvine was hosting the show Dinner Impossible on the Food Network, and he got busted for lying on his resume. He said he'd done a bunch of stuff that he actually hadn't done, and he wasn't trained like he said he was. Now, I thought the guy could cook. I mean, I found him to be a bit of an irritable asshole lot, but he certainly rose to the challenge whenever they gave him, you know, one of these dinner challenges. So I guess it kind of eluded me, but back in April, they fired Irvine and gave the show to Michael Simon. And now it's airing on Food Network, and it's really good. I'm surprised. It's a fantastic show. He takes his spin on everything they've given him and rises to the occasion. And I can't figure where they knew to air the new shows. I think it's Wednesdays at 7:30. They replay them all the time, and I never watch them live. I always record everything on DVR now, so I don't watch things live anymore. But I think it's Wednesday, 7:30, Food Network. Check it out. Anyway, so we're watching this episode recently, and he's cooking in a Jewish synagogue for Passover. And there are so many rules to Jewish cooking. It's brutal. But Passover is worse. He can't use the things he's used to using, like pork, dairy products, flour, bacon. And all the stuff he cooks, not only do they have to be kosher, but they've got to be kosher for Passover, which I guess is extra special, and extra tough, and an extra bitch to work into recipes. But not only that, they put this old Jewish woman in the kitchen with him, and she's a royal pain in the butt. She's a really nice woman. You just can't help but love her. But she's so old-fashioned, and she puts her nose up at every different take he has on one of these classic Jewish dishes. She becomes really super annoying. I mean, the man's, he's a top shelf chef. So he's going to have a fresh take on food. It's expected of him. It's his job, and that's why he has the show. So she's just busting his balls the whole time. I pulled some clips of this woman. You got to listen to this. She's a ball buster.
I also want to make a kugel with sweet potato.
I never had it that way. The kugel I have in mind is with regular potatoes. That's how I make it.
When it comes to the kitchen, I'm used to running the show. Today, Marlene is definitely going to keep me in line.
I was thinking we could top it with some smoked salmon.
We're not serving smoked salmon today.
But I could go get some if I want to.
If you want to.
For dessert.
No, you missed one item.
What did I miss?
We're having carrot simmas.
I hope everything's kosher back in the kitchen as Greg and Marlene battle it out over chicken stock.
I don't like onions. You
gotta put the onions in.
Huh?
Onions are the flavor, aren't they?
So you throw them in whole or cut them in half. That's how my mother made it. I'm just telling you.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with your mom today.
Okay.
So. Ugh. Oof. Can't you imagine if she was your mother-in-law? I'd kill her. So we're watching this. My wife says, didn't Bourdain used to call this show Dinner Slightly Difficult? And I said, yeah, he did, because I thought that was funny. Because you never thought it was all that tough? She goes, this isn't Dinner Impossible. This is Dinner Unreasonable. And I thought that was really funny, because under these circumstances, I mean, it's one thing to tell a chef, okay, here's the deal. You've got 5 hours to make an 8-course meal for 150 people in a kitchen you've never seen before, never worked in before. You have to use all your ingredients from the small grocery store here in town. But on top of that, you tell them you can't use certain things like flour, dairy, pork, which happens to be your bread and butter, you know, when you're cooking. That's what's normally what you use, what made you famous. And everything you use has to be marked kosher. And not only that, the additional restriction of kosher for Passover. And on top of that, you throw this woman in the mix to basically heckle you.
That's how I make it.
Oh, wow. I would quit. Anyway, if you like Michael Simon, and I do, you should check this out. He's far better at this show than Irvine was. He's nicer to his staff. He's nicer to everybody. And his laugh, it's infectious. And you have a hard time not liking this dude. He's a good guy, good chef too. So, Food Network, 7:30 p.m. on Wednesdays, I think. And be careful, because they show back-to-back the old shows with Robert Irvine, which I guess they were airing up until the point that they fired him. So while we're talking about Food Network, Lisa Garza, you remember her? That name ring a bell? She's the chick who made it to the final of the next Food Network Star this past year. I thought she was a really good cook. Best one of the bunch, I think. Out of all of them, I thought she was the best chef. But she had no screen presence. And I think she's cute. I mean, you know, the Food Network always managed to get shots of her wearing thin shirts. And the turkey was done. You follow me? Anyway, so she doesn't win next Food Network Star. Which, if you ask me, is like winning. But word has it now, and this is just a rumor, because it hasn't been confirmed, CBS is going to give her a show. How bizarre would it be if they gave her a show? What the hell are they going to do? What's CBS going to do with a food show? I know sometimes Bobby Flay comes on Good Morning America, one of those shows, and he'll cook for a little segment or something. Maybe they're planning that with her. I don't know. Just thought it was funny that CBS would pick up a Food Network scrap, you know, a runner-up, and give her a show. That's like telling the Food Network, you know, you chose the wrong person for your show, and I'm going to show you that you chose the wrong person. And I got to agree. I don't know. Aaron, the guy who won, is a mushmouth. That show of his, Big Daddy's House, horrible. I tried to watch it once. I just turned it off. He's a really good guy, cooks food with soul, but he talks like he's got a mouthful of mashed potatoes.
You know what? Food for the soul is pretty much food that's going to make you smile.
You know, there's a new grocery store chain that's popping up all around Southern California. It's called Fresh and Easy. I know they're beginning to surface around the country, but they're really prevalent here because I think they started here. We shopped at it a couple times. I was kind of impressed with the stuff. I was impressed with what they had and the fact that they sold California-grown produce. But we stopped. You know, I like going to the farmer's market. I mean, there's a new local produce stand near my house, and they sell stuff. They sell stuff from local farmers, too. But this store is pretty cool. It's Fresh and Easy is a new rival now to every grocery store chain here in Southern California, including Trader Joe's. It's a small supermarket. It's owned by a multinational corporation, and they're trying to provide consumers with a store that's easy to fill all your needs. Everything. It's a complete grocery store. They advertise high quality, low prices, and provide prepared foods for people who don't have time or just don't want to cook. Everything, including vegetables, are neatly wrapped in clear, eco-friendly wrap. So you can check yourself out with it, and it retains freshness as well. And I love self-checkout, because I don't like dealing with rude cashiers. I think we've become a self-serve society for a reason, because service has become that bad. It's one of my biggest pet peeves about grocery stores and any retail place. The checkout clerks, they act like they have the toughest job in the world ringing up your groceries. And half the time, they don't even acknowledge you and talk to the bagging girl the entire time you're there. And to make matters worse, and I don't know if it's nationwide or not, but out here, they're mostly unionized. So whenever the union decides they need more money or better health care, they threaten to go on strike, all hell breaks loose around here. It becomes the big thing, the biggest thing. You know, I'll get back to that because I'm getting off track. But I wasn't doing the show back when we had that last big strike, and I got pissed off. I really went on a tear. I wish I had the show. Anyway, Fresh and Easy, it's unique, right? Because it's taking advantage of some opportunities that get overlooked by big markets. They open their stores in, you know, rich white people neighborhoods, but they're also opening in the hood. Cities like Compton, low-income areas, where stores like Ralph's, Albertsons, Vaughn's, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, they don't bother opening in these places. Now, that's one, but it's a really big reason why I think it's going to be a success. They keep their prices low, because they make things simple. They make all the prepared foods every day in one location, deliver them to all the individual stores at once. Everything goes on the shelves in display-ready packaging. That's their term. So what's in this packaging has a barcode on it, and you can check yourself out and say F you to all the asshole grocery clerks who think they're better than you. All right? So take that, you monkeys. A monkey could do your job, and I'll prove it. Deep, deep. I mean, the food that they make themselves. They say it's really healthy. It's free of trans fats, artificial colors and flavors, and in most cases, preservatives. I mean, when they can afford to keep preservatives out. I mean, compare that to the boxes of chemistry that the grocery stores sell. That's a definite step up, and it makes it easy for people to make quick, healthy food choices. And if that's not enough, hormone and antibiotic-free meats and cage-free eggs. That's a standard, so you're not eating more chemistry when you shop there. So anybody who can't get to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods doesn't have one in their area, I think this is a good alternate for you. I mean, there's very little that I go to the grocery store for now anyway. I don't see the point in putting more money in the pockets of grocery store clerks anyway. Now, the Albertsons near my new house, self-checkout. So I might go there more often when I need something, if I can't get it somewhere else. Because I just don't like putting money in the pockets of clerks. When they went on that strike a few years ago, it was insane. Their union was fighting for better health benefits for part-time employees. That's why they went on strike. These are people, mostly non-skilled laborers. They stock shelves for a living. They work 30 hours a week, maybe. A lot of them have multiple children. They can't say they have the cleanest backgrounds, but they, you know, certainly don't live the cleanest lives. They want full benefits for working part-time, and they want it paid 100%. Where do you work where your health care is 100% paid by your employer? On top of that, you're a part-timer and you have multiple children, so they're paid for too. That must be nice. You want to know why grocery stores are expensive? This certainly doesn't help. So the grocery store said, no, we're not going to agree to those demands. It's stupid. So they went on strike. And I should remind you that the kind of people we're dealing with here are these assholes are striking in front of the stores. They're in their Raiders shirts and hats or on sideways. You follow me on this? Got rap music playing loud. It's like they're at home in their front yard. I drove by one store. There were strikers out sitting in their front in the front of the store with yard chairs. Like they're picnicking. Somebody set up a basketball hoop. They're playing 3-on-3 basketball in the parking lot. They're yelling at people who are going in for groceries. There were stories of old people who couldn't drive anymore. They could no longer drive. They're on limited income. They walk to the store every day. They've been buying their food in these grocery stores for years. They've been nice to the clerks every time they see them, ask about their kids. How are you, dear? This, that, and the other. And these clerks are screaming at them, terrorizing them, threatening them if they go in the store. These old people didn't know what to do with themselves. There were fights in some spots. Cops were called out. I was beside myself. I mean, what kind of people are we dealing with? These were animals. So I said, screw it. F the supermarket, farmer's market, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, now Fresh and Easy. Big chains can blow me. Well, I think that's it. Is that it? Yeah, I think so. Well, listen, thanks for tuning in. Check back next time. I'm going to key you in on everything brewery, okay? And here's a teaser for you. If you're going to the GABF, they're going to be there. All right, you don't have to wait too long to taste what I've been raving about. That's next month, actually in October. Music in this episode, Ulrich Snaus and Coldplay. So if you like the music, click on the link, the iTunes store. Check out our website, zeroface.wordpress.com. Click once, buy the songs for 99 cents a piece. Cheers to Sick Puppy for this awesome home-brewed Belgian Abbey Ale, shouldibrewthat.com. Check out what Sick's doing on his spare time. I don't think we want to know too much about that. Look for Caracol's Nostradamus in your favorite beer store. Nostradamus. It's a Belgian classic brown ale. I think you very well may enjoy this thing. If you like My Life as a Foodie, you just can't get enough talk about beer and all things beer, beersafari.com. It's a jungle of beer. See you guys next time. I'm out of here. Ciao. I used to rule the world. Seas would rise when I gave the word. Now in the